Obviously, you know, it's a very secretive industry.
Which I understand, that's fine. It's like I'm happy to tell people what's in my Amaro, because like with 40 to 50 botanicals in each drink, feel free to go ahead and try and recreate the recipe.
Welcome to Drinks Adventures, a podcast about drinks and the people who make them. I'm James Atkinson, and in this episode we return to Beechworth in High Country, Victoria, after having Ben Krause from Bridge Road Brewers on the show last year. This time we're joined by Chef Michael Ryan from the highly acclaimed Beechworth restaurant, Provenance, to discuss Beechworth Bitters Company, his side project dedicated to Amaro and cocktail bitters. A few years ago I brought you an episode about Italian Amari, produced in partnership with the Italian Cultural Institute, which I've linked to from the show notes. This episode puts an Australian angle on this lesser-known spirits category, as Michael explains how he created his own library of extracts from roots, leaves, flowers and bark, and blended them into his own distinct range of bitters that speak clearly of their Beechworth provenance. Well, Michael, what sort of inspired this new venture for you?
It was a bit of a mix of a circumstance and a deliberate choice, I guess. But it was actually back in 2019, late 19.
I was looking, because we've got the restaurant in Beechworth, Provenance, and I was looking for like another avenue, another income stream, another sort of area of interest or something to do as well as the restaurant. And I actually got a grant from the Department of Ag, the Victorian Department of Ag, to look at the production of sake making in Beechworth. So I got a $25,000 grant to look into that, which I did, and then decided that it wasn't, to me anyway, wasn't really viable just because of the restrictions over, you couldn't do any polishing and you couldn't really access too many different strains of rice other than importing from Japan. And I just didn't fit me that well. I know some people are doing some interesting stuff in that field in Australia now. In fact, my friend Hamish in Bright, he's not making sake, but he's just set up Australia's first shochu distillery.
Yep, that's Reed & Co., isn't it?
Yeah. And he's doing an amazing product, and he makes his own koji, most importantly, and he's doing a really good job with that. So anyway, I decided it wasn't really where I wanted to go. And at the same time, obviously by then it was early 2020, and we all know what happened then. And so we did the first long lockdown, and the second long lockdown came along, and the first lockdown, we worked really hard doing our produce store and everything like that, and it was more just to keep busy. It certainly wasn't a profitable business. But second one, we decided to just focus on a few different things. And I started clearing out my cool room, and about 4 years earlier, I'd always had an interest in cocktails, and I'd purchased some bittering botanicals to make my own cocktail ingredients. But running the restaurant, I never got a chance to go about making them. So I used that time to start playing around making my own cocktail bitters. And cocktail bitters are almost a simplified version of Amaro in that they're usually macerations, have a bittering element to them. They tend to have much less ingredients and are often a lot more linear than an Amaro. At that time, I didn't know much about that. But making my cocktail bitters, I had all these rackings. And so I read somewhere about just, you know, turning it into an Amaro, which I did.
What do you mean by rackings?
Well, basically, when you do your botanical macerations, you get a lot of proteins and fats and everything falling out. So you need to let them settle and you get a lot of sediment. And so you take off as much as you can. But there's always, you know, in any racking, there's always share that you normally throw out. So I had a fair bit of racking. So I just turned it into Amaro, which is basically just sweetening it, really. And so that sort of got me thinking. So then I just went on a bit of a mission to create a library of botanicals. So I did about 120 botanical extracts. I now work with about 165 botanicals across the whole range. But so I did 120 botanical extracts. So I basically then had a library and then used that library to start making styles of Amaro.
Tell us about that extraction process. Exactly what does that involve? What's the base spirit that you are working with? And is it the same for every botanical, or were you using a range of different regimes for each of them?
It's a grain-neutral spirit from Manildra. And, you know, I haven't tried it with the grape spirit from Tarak, but I really don't need another variable in my 160 botanicals. So, and I'm pretty happy with the grain spirit from Manildra. I mean, I could I probably couldn't because I don't have the time, but I could look at making my own base spirit. But really what you want for Amaro is that really clean, neutral base.
Leave that stuff to the experts, I say.
Exactly. And it's just like they do a much better job than I would do in creating a really neutral spirit. I might be able to create something that's interesting, but it's not necessarily what I want in the Amaro. And then in terms of the botanicals, I treat them all individually and then do blending afterwards. I do most of the macerations at a specific ABV at about 55. I just find that's a sort of sweet spot for me.
And that's just essentially soaking the botanicals in the alcohol for how long? Yeah.
Well, that's the real variable because it just does depend on the botanicals. So dried stuff can be usually a week, sometimes a bit longer. Some things I just leave in there, like green walnuts, vanilla, all that stuff you just leave in the alcohol because it just gets stronger and stronger. What you're trying to avoid while you take anything out is often after a time you start getting real vegetable kind of flavors from the botanicals rather
probably
than
their sort of their harshness and astringency as well,
yeah,
I would think.
Yeah. And then for fresh things like fresh herbs and stuff, that can be like 6 hours, as short as that. So I do the alcohol maceration at 55. I also do a aqueous maceration, essentially like a tea, at 60 degrees of the same botanical, and I blend the two to bring them down to about 35. So I blend it most of them at about 35.
And pardon my ignorance, but aqueous? What?
Water. Sorry, water.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool.
There are a few differences and a few exceptions. Some things just don't work so well as a maceration that you can get some strange things popping out of alcohol when you start putting things in alcohol. Like alcohol is really good at pulling out pectin, so you get often, like with gentian, which is one of the bittering botanicals I use, you can get a big thick layer of like this jelly on top. You just skim it off, it's fine. But so often I do distillation as a, because some things either taste better as a distillate or they just, you get a better product. Like, for example, myrrh, which I use in a lot of my blends. If you do it as a maceration, you just get a solution that looks like milky tea. And eventually it does drop out, but it takes months. So
do you have a still or?
Just a small one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing individual botanicals, so I don't need a big batch. So.
Yeah. And was that actual distillation? How did you sort of learn that skill set?
Fortunately, I'm good friends with Hamish from Reemco.
Of course, yeah.
And also Lee from Backwoods has been a good source of knowledge. So do you know Backwoods Distillery?
A previous guest on the Drinks Adventures podcast. They were on a few years ago. Lovely people.
Yeah, they are great. And so, obviously, you know, everybody's pretty generous with their knowledge and time, so.
And did you have, like, Amari that you had enjoyed that were sort of benchmarks for you that kind of made you interested in going down this path?
Yeah, like I said, I sort of did fall into the making Amari, but I've always had an interest in it. It was always a category I really, really enjoyed. I've got a friend, Pete Bartholomew, who's just mad about them, so he's always got a great selection. Certainly always an interest, but I obviously know a lot more about them now. Obviously, Amaro, you're talking Italian drinks. A lot of them I find now, probably back then I didn't, but now I find too sweet. I find their sweetness levels, particularly for the mainstream brands, can be really high and just fine for one little sip. But as a, like, if you want one or two glasses, it's just too much, I think. Part of my choice when I was making my styles of Amari, I deliberately wanted to bring back the sugar level. So I work on about half of what most Italian Amari work on. Having said that, there are some drier styles from Italy, and there's lots of, we're starting to see in Australia, a lot of more interesting, smaller producers coming into Australia because, you know, there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Amari in Italy. We don't see so many of them. We tend to see just the big brands. But some importers are starting to bring in some really interesting, more niche styles. Agala's one that I really, really impressed by.
What was the name, sorry?
Agala, A-R-G-A-L-A. So it's okay. A small, two guys, small, they make gin up near Trentino, I believe, but they also do some, couple of Amaris, and they're really, really well balanced, the sugar levels are really good, just really delicious.
Mm. And it kind of, you know, complements what you're doing at the restaurant there, doesn't it? Because they're just so sort of intrinsically linked with food, and there is something about that kind of ritual after a meal of having a glass of a really good Amari. It does just, I don't know how much of it's you know, underpinned by science or whether it's placebo, but it definitely makes your stomach feel much better if you've kind of overindulged or whatever. It's a really nice feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And like it seems like an odd match for our restaurant's very Japanese leaning, but it's the same thing after a big meal, just that a bitter drink, certainly anecdotally, does really help with digestion and just sort of helping everything just calm down a little bit after a big meal. And usually the more bitter, the better. There is some theory about it. It's like that consumption of bitter things provokes a reaction in your body that you're consuming a poison. Most poisons are bitter. So you start salivating more and producing more bile to digest faster, to get whatever you've just ingested through your body faster. That's the theory. I don't know. I haven't read any scientific papers to back that up, but sounds good.
And what about the actual botanicals that you were using? Some of those were sort of locally sourced, but others had to get from suppliers. Were they Australian? What was the sort of the mix there?
Yeah, so with like now with 165 botanicals, it is a big mix, but because it's almost like there's seemingly unlimited choice of what you could use. And so certainly for local stuff, all of the herbs I use are local, either from my garden or if I'm using bigger amounts, I buy from local growers. All of the leaves, like bay leaves, rose geranium, fig leaves, all of those, just foraging wherever, you know, they just grow wherever. All the fruits, berries, and also all the citrus is from the area. We've got a local yuzu farm up near Bright, and she supplies yuzu and bergamot, which I use a lot in the product, and also the citrus leaves I get from her as well. Nuts, and so then you're looking at all the dry stuff, all the spices, obviously, are imported. Most of the bittering botanicals are dried. Some are made in Australia. Horehound's Australian. The wormwood is fresh, as you know, wormwood growing in everybody's back garden. There's lots of different species, so you tend to find a bush that you're happy with the flavour is. But the absentia one is the main one I use, and we've got access to that. And you actually don't need a lot of it because it's wormwood. It's pretty strong. A lot of the ingredients. There's actually an apothecary in town. Girl called Naomi runs it, and she uses virtually all the same botanicals I use. She says they do things, I say they do other things, you know. But so I get a lot of those from the same suppliers that apothecaries and also gin distilleries would be using, like things like myrrh and elecampane and all the bittering. Like I use about 11 or 12 different bittering botanicals, so most of those come from those companies.
Are you aware of many other people who are working with Amari in Australia?
Yeah, there's a few. There was obviously Autonomy. They've been going for a while. Dave Verhul from Embla, who's got Saison Vermouth, he's put out an Amaro, which is a wine-based Amaro, which is really good. Yeah, there's a few. Nothing like it's like if you look at what's happening in the States, there's heaps of small producers there. I think it's certainly a growing field, but it's still, I mean, for our restaurant, we always obviously offer Amaro, and I would still say at close to 85-90% of the answer to the question, do you know what Amari is or Amaro is no, they don't know. So most people don't know what it is. So you kind of have to pull it back to probably Campari, even though the Italians wouldn't say that's an Amaro because it's an aperitif, but we can say that because it's the same process. But yeah, we pull it back to something they know and then build it up from there. So, and most people are pretty interested in it. But yeah, that bitter flavor is challenging for some people, but it's what makes it, you know, such a unique drink is that bitter character.
Tell us about the blending process that you went through, because that would have been quite painstaking, I would imagine. Is that something that you did on your own, or you had other opinions involved?
Certainly the first bit I did on my own. Like once I had my library, I decided I was probably shouldn't have, because I started with about a concept of about 6 Amari. Probably should have came in a bit softer than that, but and I knew I wanted a citrus style, like a Sicilian style, and I knew I wanted a red aperitif, Campari style. I knew I wanted a Fernet, and I knew I wanted a richer, more classic after dinner style, and I certainly made all of those. There's one Amari I make which I can't quite recall where it came from, but it's a vegetable based Amaro. It's kind of like an Amaro a chef might make. And it actually is based on vegetables, so it's tomato, beetroot, carrot, cucumber, celery, I do have an idea of where it came from because I started using doing a kombu extract. I use kombu extensively in my kitchen, the Japanese seaweed kombu. So I just out of curiosity did a extract with that, and it's really, really interesting, and just that real savouriness, and just sort of reminded me of a broth. So I built up from that, and so I've got that drink called B8, which is, I don't know of any other drinks quite like it on the market. So yeah.
Well, artichoke is quite a common thing in Italian amari, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly as a bittering element, the carciofio style of amaro, where they use the artichoke leaves and the stem and heart as a bittering botanical, basically, which I do. That's one of my bittering botanicals. So.
Was it a difficult process? Like, what were the kind of challenges that you had with the blending?
There's not a lot of information out there, obviously, you know, it's a very secretive industry.
Yeah. Sort of the secret herbs and spices in amari, I guess.
Which I understand. That's fine. It's like I'm happy to tell people what's in my amari because, like, with 40 to 50 botanicals in each drink, feel free to go ahead and try and recreate the recipe. I'm happy to tell people what's in it. More, there's not a lot of information about the process and all of that sort of stuff. So just pieced it together from various internet sources. Like, there's no one big book on amaro production and stuff like that. So,
but is it sort of like you have a backbone that, you know, you get with a few key botanicals and then you're dropping in different accents, or is it that kind
of thing? So basically I work on a percentage of non-bittering and bittering botanicals. And so, like, for my orchard, which is the citrus-based amaro, and it's really gentle, kind of amaro Montenegro level of bitterness, really sort of we call it our gateway amaro. It's like that is 20% bittering botanicals and 80% non-bittering. By the time we get to the Fernet, which is a style of amaro which tend to be higher in alcohol, really bitter and almost medicinal, it's flipped and we're using 80% bittering botanicals and 20% non-bittering. And then within the bittering botanicals, you've got another ratio there of, so like I said, I use about 11 or 12 different bittering botanicals, some extremely bitter, some like, say, dandelion, which are just gently bitter. And so you have a blend in there as well. There are certain bittering botanicals I use across a whole range. Gentian, obviously, is the most important one. Burdock and Barberry I use quite a lot. I created first those ratios of different botanicals and then decided, so in the case of the orchard, the citrus-based one, obviously I wanted lots of citrus in it. So unfortunately I have access to a lot of citrus. So there's 11 types of citrus in there, lots of different lemons, limes, oranges, some mandarins, the yuzu, bergamot, and grapefruit. But then I didn't want it just citrus. So then you look at other elements so that I thought would work. Having cooked in a kitchen for like decades, the one thing that you do learn in a kitchen is how to make a recipe in your head, and you can get close to a finishing point without, before you even come to assembling it in the kitchen. And that's kind of what I did with the recipes. And once I got my base recipe, then I could do the trials of changing percentages of, like, if I felt the bay was too strong, I could bring it back or vice versa. And that's when the trials began, and that's when you get other people to try it. And yeah. And then obviously sugar levels was a big decision as well, how much sugar to add. And basically you do the botanical extracts, then you do the blending. And like I said, most of my blending comes in at about 35-36%. And then you do the diluting. So certainly some amaro is bottled at that higher ABV, but most of my work at about 22. So you do the dilution. And the dilution actually, like often the case when you bring out a lot of different flavors, when you bring back that alcohol. And then the sweetening as well. And the sweetening, I tend to use just table sugar, like caster sugar, except for Black Forest, which is the richer after dinner style. And initially I was making my own caramel, but now with the volumes I'm doing, caramelizing 60 kilos of sugar is pretty tricky. So I've actually, I talked to Ben from Bridge Road, and he put me onto some stuff called Belgium candy syrup, which is strangely enough made in Belgium. And it's a caramel syrup, but they add some yeast and a few proteins to the sugar while they caramelize it. So you get really complex flavors. It's delicious. It's quite expensive, but you don't need a lot of it. A little bit goes a long way. So that's the only, and for one of the other ones, I use unpasteurized honey from Beechworth as well. The other thing I don't do that most Italian amaris have is caramel coloring. I don't do any coloring.
And you mentioned that, you know, your volumes had increased. So how's that been going with online sales, people buying it in store? Have you got many ranging in retail a little bit as well?
Retail, like I don't push it that much. I do have to get onto it a bit. So I have a retail store on my website, which sort of ticks along. But wholesale, most of it goes to wholesale. So I sell to a lot of restaurants in Melbourne, quite a few in Canberra and Sydney. Sydney's a building market. And then quite a few bottle shops as well. Black Hearts are a big buyer. I'm probably now at the point of, I definitely am at the point of looking at a distributor. So I've had a few meetings. Nothing has come of it yet. But the first couple of years, I was making enough and selling out too quickly. And so I've increased my volumes, and now I've got plenty of stock, which is great. So it's not great to be selling out of an item if somebody's stocking it behind the bar and they can't get it for a few months. So that's often where you'll lose a client. So if you can keep that consistency of supply, that's pretty good.
So as you've kind of increased production, has the artisan approach changed at all, or is it just sort of a matter of making larger quantities? And can you see a point where you're kind of going to have to move to a bigger facility or something like that?
Yeah, certainly that's the a consideration. At the moment, I've increased volume. So I'm still pretty small though. Like I'm still doing, like the latest batch of Orchard is 1200 bottles. So it's not huge, but I've now got eight products in the range, which I probably need to stop. that's it for now. But, with the equipment, I'm in an old winery, a disused winery that has previously held like Willem Kurt and Fighting Gallagher. I know Mark Walpole used to work at a Smith's Vineyard in Beechworth. And the space-wise, I mean, I do take a lot of space because I've got like, I would have like 200 jars, and then I've varying vessels from 1 litre jars up to 100 litre tanks of the botanicals. And then there's the blended stuff as well. So with the equipment and spacing got now, what I could do is increase the number of times I make it each year to increase volume. And once I've done that, like I could probably do each batch once more a year, which would be a challenge running the restaurant as well, but I'll work that out later. After that point, I would need to look at a new space. But it is like, it's pretty, in terms of equipment, it's pretty simple. Like I said, it's just a lot of tanks and there's a still, but that's a pretty small thing. Filtration is the biggest, the point that takes up a bit of space and a bit of equipment. In terms of filtration, I don't do any fining, but I do filtration, cold filtration, only because with all those botanicals, you can get some stuff dropping out in bottle once it's cold. So I try and eliminate that. I don't particularly, not after a perfect crystal clear product, but I just don't want great big lumps of sediment at the bottom. Because like I said, you can get a lot of strange botanical stuff dropping out and a lot of tannins and all that sort of stuff that drop out over time. So yeah, so I certainly can increase volume again, and that will take me through for the next quite a few years because, you know, it's a fair bit of stock. Like I said, I've got eight in the lineup now, so.
Good stuff. And do you have you don't have a cellar door or anything like that?
Well, we just above the restaurant, we just built a little cocktail bar called the Parlor Amaro Cocktail Bar, which I'm running. I quite love running a cocktail bar. And it also doubles up as a cellar door and retail space for the Amaro. It was part of the cellar door grant program, which worked pretty well. But yeah, we run it as a cocktail bar, which has actually been really interesting because I love Amari. But Amari is such a versatile drink in the cocktail scheme of things, and I can't think of many cocktails that aren't improved by the addition of a little bit of Amaro somewhere. So we offer like a lot of, we tend to work towards more classic cocktails, but making them our own by using our own product, where normally you'd have Amaro Montenegro or Fernet Branco or something like that. We use our own product.
Cool. Well, what's the best way for people to get hold of the products? They can obviously come and try them at the cocktail bar. Can they actually buy them in Beechworth as well?
Cellar Door Wine Store stocks a few bit, but they can just buy it straight from us in Beechworth. And then I have my online shop as well, beechworthbitters.com. Yeah. So now I've got six Amari. So they range from the Orchard, which is the citrus-based one, Beetlejuice, which is the red aperitif, rhubarb, citrus. It's called Beetlejuice because it does have beetles in it. It's got coloured with cochineal. which is what Campari used to use. And the only reason I did that was because I was kind of interested in cochineal.
Annoying vegans.
Yeah, that as well. And then we have, the one I mentioned before, the vegetable one, and then Walk in the Black Forest, which is the richer cherry kind of spicy one, and the Fernet, which is the sort of four types of mint, Douglas fir, blue spruce, and very bitter, very low in sugar, only 6% sugar, and higher in alcohol, like at 34%. That's the core range. They're the ones with the white label with the artwork on it. The artwork's from a local woman called Jessie Dallenberg-Schultz, and she knew a tattoo artist called Cosmo Felton from Melbourne, so he did the artwork, so I was pretty happy with that. And then I've got a few sort of limited release ones, like the Daisy Age, which is one based on 15 flowers, and that's the one sweetened with pasteurized honey. It's also got some beeswax in it, which gives it a real buttery kind of character. I do two liqueurs, one called Yuzu Cello, which is I just wanted to showcase the local yuzu, but sort of a riff on limoncello, but again, about half the amount of sugar because limoncellos are jarringly sweet. And it's got a few other botanicals in it just to make it a bit more interesting. And then finally, my new one, which is still in tank, but I'm just, will be bottling in the next month, is my version of green chartreuse.
Well, sounds like you're still having fun with it, that's for sure.
Yeah, it is. It is fun, yeah.
Awesome, Michael. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to have a chat with us.
Yeah, no problem. Are you an Amaro drinker? Do you often partake in Amaro?
I mean, look, I'm not someone who has a library of them at home, but it's something I really enjoy, you know, when I'm out at a restaurant or something like that. And, yeah, definitely keen to get more into it, for sure.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting field. And like I said, we're starting to see some really interesting imported stuff coming through. So,
good stuff. Well, thanks for your time.